All right, I thank you for being here during spring break. I invite you to turn to Colossians 3, 5 through 13. It's time to get dressed. Colossians chapter 3, verse 5. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived. But now you must also rid yourselves of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you've taken off your old self with its practices, and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge in the image of its creator. Here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, or free, but Christ is all and in all. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. I love the nonprofit Dressed for Success. This is an international organization that goes out and helps ladies who are underprivileged. They provide them nice clothes for an interview, and then when these ladies get the job, then they provide them the appropriate clothes for them to go to work. Dressed for Success provides clothes for about 45,000 women in the United States every single year. You ever think, well, why do I dress the way that I do? There are people who are critical of me because I wear a suit on Sunday mornings. Why do you wear a suit on Sunday mornings? Those are just so out of style. Well, I didn't ask you why you wear what you do to church, because I'm just so glad you're here. It's more about your heart than it is about your clothes. I was raised in a generation where you wore your absolute best when you went to worship. Well, I've had people, why don't you wear skinny jeans? All of my jeans are skinny. They always have been. Well, why don't you stop wearing a tie? Why don't the staff stop wearing a tie? Well, if I thought that would lead more people to Christ and more people would join our church, we'd get rid of the ties this morning. But you know, I've learned that sometimes your work ethic sort of goes along with the way you dress. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I have my Carhartt. I've got them in shorts and carpenter pants. When I came to the sportsman banquet, I was told I had to wear a camouflage shirt, a camouflage hat, my Carhartts, and my Justin boots. And our members walked right by me and never spoke. They had no idea who I was. I have my blue jeans. I own two pairs of blue jeans. If you see me at Walmart in my blue jeans, you will not speak to me. You will not recognize me. I have my shorts. I love my shorts. One thing I don't understand are blue jeans. When I was growing up, we had tie-dye blue jeans. And what that was, nice, perfect blue jeans ruined in Clorox. And you paid top dollar for tie-dye blue jeans. And then as I got a little bit older, they would take shotguns and buckshot and shoot holes in blue jeans. And people paid a premium price for blue jeans. Anytime I got holes in the knees of my blue jeans, my mama had some navy blue iron-on patches that she put on there. And when the weather was hot, when you walked or ran, they stuck to your knees. They also dried our pants in the stretchers. If you don't know what that is, ask your great-grandmother. She'll tell you. And that's why we walk like this all the time, too. Our knees would not bend. But now people are buying jeans that are just in shreds. $125 for a pair of jeans that are already worn out. Now, I wouldn't buy those, first of all, because my knees are not very attractive. And I don't think that would be good to expose you to that. But the other thing is, when I buy a pair of slacks, I like to know they're not holy, 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 but they're just absolutely a solid piece of cloth. But if that's the way you want to burn your parents' money, I suggest you continue doing it. Well, I want you to know, when we turn to Colossians chapter 3, you need to realize that Christianity is not a group of do's and don'ts. But if you have a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, you're saved, and you're going to walk in fellowship with Him, He determines what you're going to wear, your character, and your behavior. And that's what He talks about right here in Colossians chapter 3, beginning with verse 5. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're saved, there's a certain kind of character and behavior that you clothe yourself in that no longer belongs on your body and wrapped around your spirit. So let's begin now. First of all, take our conduct off the pollution of sinful man. To begin this section, the Apostle Paul uses some really strong language in verse 5. He says, put to death. He said, kill certain kind of behavior that's in your life. You got the King James Version, it's the old word, mortify. In putting off the corruption of our sin, there's several steps we have to take. First of all, I want you to notice the sinful life. Once we're exhorted to put to death or kill sinful man, we're reminded as to the behavior of sinful man. Paul details a graphic list here. Look at verse 5. He says, cast off, if you're saved, he said, cast off sexual immorality, impurity, and lust. Some translations say fornication. That comes from a Greek word from which we derive our word pornography. All sexual immorality, sex outside of marriage. God has ordained marriage for a reason. And then sex before marriage, that's ruled out right here. I want you to know what else is ruled out here. Alternative lifestyle and homosexuality. He says all moral indecency, filth, and lust, he said, that should not be named among you once you're a born-again believer. But then he lists, also he changes gears and talks about the sin of idolatry. He says here, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. You get that word covetousness, and it actually means desire. It means the desire to have more. Nothing wrong with trying to better yourself. Nothing wrong with trying for that promotion. Nothing wrong with trying to upgrade that house or that automobile. I was listening to Clark Howard yesterday afternoon on the radio, and a lady called in. She said, I'm upset with my husband. She said, he's driving the same truck that he drove before we got married, and said the truck is 21 years old. And he said, I've read what you said about buying new vehicles, that we shouldn't buy a new vehicle, buy one that's 1 or 2 years old. And I'm standing my ground with my husband. I'm not going to let him have a new truck. Clark Howard said, your husband's my kind of man. Let him buy a new truck. He's going to keep it 21 more years. That husband is not a covetous man. When we're covetous, that's when we let things or we let money get in the way of our daily walk with God. Somebody says, if you want more goods, more material things all the time, it's very unlikely that you desire more of God. Many people have the habit of killing ants in their house. You ever had an ant invasion in your house? We have the least bug problem we've ever had in the home we're in now. Seldom we ever have to use an exterminator. But here's what happens inevitably when you go on vacation. the ants invade. And I know what happened. My next door neighbor treated for ants. And when he treats for ants, they come in my house. The last time we had an invasion when we were out of town, they came in the kitchen and they got into the Crisco. Now what's with that? There's brown sugar in that cabinet. There's cinnamon. There's all kind of things. But they got all greased up in the Crisco. And so I go out and get my little sprayer and I'm killing these ants. But you know what the problem is? I can kill all the ants I want to, but I cannot get to the source. Where are they coming from? Then you have to call the exterminator. I remember one time we had the ants that came in. They came in the master bath. We just couldn't get rid of them. And so the exterminator came. He followed a trail all the way the length of our house, around the corner, to the front yard, to the root ball of a holly tree. Are you kidding? And you know what? The exterminator has never looked at me and said, "Now, Dr. May, I'm going to need your advice. If you'll just get out of the way, I'll get to the source and I'll get rid of these." Listen, we have to call out to Jesus to come to deal with our sin problem. He's not interested in helping me with my life. He wants to be my life so these things won't be named among me. Notice the next thing that we should not be dressed with, and that is shameful behavior. Look at verse 8 and 9 here. Twice he says, in verse 8 and 9, he says, "But now you must also rid yourselves of such things." And then he goes down here in verse 9, he says, "Do not lie to each other, since you've taken off the old self with its practices and put on the new." He says, these things don't have any place in our life. Well, what are those things? He says that we're not to have anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language coming from our lips. Anger. Just think about that. It describes a deep internal feeling. Matthew chapter 5, verse 22, Jesus equated anger with murder. Ephesians chapter 4, 26, we're exhorted, "Be angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath." The implication is that it is not always wrong to be angry. We've got to be angry at the right thing, the right person, at the right time. There's certain things that make me angry. There's been a movie or two that has indicated that Jesus was having an affair with Mary Magdalene. That makes me angry. There's been one movie produced in Hollywood that said that Jesus had homosexual relations with his disciples. That makes me angry. And you ask why I rarely go to movies? I don't want to support an industry that stands against everything I believe about the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Now listen to me carefully. Lord Jesus himself on several occasions became angry when he turned over the tables there at the temple with the money changers. When the Pharisees were attacking him, he became angry. Now notice the word wrath there. That's the next level. That stands for a certain outburst of our anger, really a wild rage. That word malice there is a broad word, the Greek word for all sorts of moral depravity and badness. It was a general term for all sorts of evil. He said those things should be cast aside. Next, he said we remove outward hypocrisy. The word blasphemy that we use today is a word which had a twofold meaning. If you slander somebody else, when it's directed towards another person, that's slander. But he says that whenever the speech is directed toward God and it's negative, that is blasphemy. And then he says the word filthy communication. Booger Holler Road, that's just cussing. I get so sick to death of people who say they're born again, and if they're around a certain crowd, they're using profanity. Hopefully this week we'll get to go to the Masters. They control the crowds over there. If you're drunk and disorderly, you're arrested, your badge is taken, you'll never receive one again. But one thing they can't control is the people who are seated around you. You have your wife there. On Fridays, I usually take my sister. You're seated there in some bleachers, and there's five or six guys trying to out-cuss the other one. You just want to take them out. Do you not have any respect for a lady? But then ladies, I hear that commonly. Just in a crowd, not trying to overhear, they just pollute your hearing with it in just a few moments. And he says, if you're born again, he said, let no filthy communication come out of your mouth. And then he says here, we're not to lie to one another. That word lie there just to mean to mask, means to play a part. He says, this is just the way we're supposed to live our lives. I remember several years ago when we bought our house, you know, you always get a termite letter. The seller provides a termite letter. So I decided right after the closing, I would hire my own exterminator. He went underneath the house and he came out and he said, sir, I hate to tell you this, but there's a mound about that big around, that big, right under your front steps that's active. I said, no, wait a minute. I said, there's an exterminator here in town who's a professing Christian who represented the seller who signed off. There's no sign of any termites. Now, let me tell you what the law is in the state of Georgia in case you're having trouble sleeping tonight so you can repeat it to yourself. In the state of Georgia, if somebody gives you a termite letter at closing that your property is clear of any termites, and you find out about it, the law says that that exterminator has to come in and treat that whole property for free, or the Department of Agriculture takes away their license to be an exterminator in the state of Georgia. You got that? Now here's what I love to do. I love to talk to somebody who says they're a professing Christian and I think they're lying to me, but I know the whole truth. And I like to ask a question to see if they'll lie. So I got in touch with this guy that gave the termite letter to the seller that there was just not a sign of any termites, and I invite him in over to our property and I said, I want you to go under there and look, and I'm going to tell you exactly where. He says, sir, I will tell you, Brother Phil. And he preaches a little on the side, too. He's just real chummy. I don't trust him. Don't buy a used car from a preacher. Just don't do that. And so I talked to him a little while, and he crawled under there, and he came out, and his eyes were big, and he said, boy, I just can't believe I missed that. I said, I can't either. I said, what you going to do about it? He said, tell you what I'll do. Now, I'd already been told by the exterminator, don't let them just treat the area. Because when you just treat the area, they spread all over your house to another place. He said, I'll treat that area for free. I said, really? He said, and I'll do the rest of your house for $800. I said, no, sir. I don't believe I'll be dealing with you anymore. And he left. Now, I could have called the Department of Agriculture if I wanted to, but I didn't. I hired another exterminator to do it for less money, and I've never had any problems at all, but I'm going to tell you this. I've never had any respect for that young man in this community ever again. Forgive him, yeah. I forgave him, or I'd have called the law on him. But then he says here, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Now all of these matters which are to have no part in the life of the one who's been raised with Christ. Look at verse 9. The new man is to reign supreme, and the old man must be put to death. He says, you put off the old man with the deeds, you take on a new nature. Doesn't mean you're going to live a sinless perfection, but it also doesn't mean if you're saved, that's a license to commit these things. I was reading about an evangelist who was traveling to a destination. He arrived by plane, went to his hotel. He got on an elevator. He was the only one in the elevator, and a very beautiful woman got on the elevator with him, and she was overloaded with luggage, and he pressed number 5. He's going to the 5th floor, and she looked at him and smiled, total stranger. She said, oh, I'm going to the 5th floor too. So he was caught. They went to the 5th floor, elevator open. Being a gentleman, he looked at her and said, look, I'll help you get all this luggage to your room. So he took some of her luggage because she was overloaded and went down to her room and put it down at the door. And she looked at him and smiled and said, why don't you come in for a while? He said, no, I don't believe I will. He was telling one of his fellow preachers about this incident sometime later. And his preacher friend commended him. He said, boy, in obedience and fear of the Lord, you did not go into that hotel room. He said, no, it had nothing to do with that. He said, I'm afraid of my wife. There's no way in the world. I was like, well, whatever your motive is, certain things shouldn't be named in your life. And then the other thing I want you to see is our character. We've been exhorted to remove and put off, he says, the corruption of the sinful man. And now we're about to get dressed here. He says, put on the character of the saintly man. I love Norman B. Harrison's commentary of this verse. He says, when God creates a new man, instead of taking him to his glorious home in heaven, once you're saved, he said, he is careful to play the part of a seamstress or a tailor in providing a suitable clothing for his son to wear. His dress must conform to his nature, position, and purpose in life. So the father invites him into his robing room, not to make, but to take the articles of apparel most suited to his new person and his station in life. Our new wardrobe is given to us the moment we trust Jesus as Savior. We're clad in brand new apparel and character. Now notice the source here down in verse 10 and 11. Paul reminds us from whence godly character originates. He says, put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him, where there's neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond nor free, but Christ is all and in all. The old man is the old nature of sin. But he says the new man is the new nature of Christ. The new nature is God's gift of spiritual power through the Lord Jesus Christ. The idea is that once we put off the old nature, we put on that new nature. Lenski, a great Bible scholar, said the old man is not converted. He cannot be. He is not renewed. He will not be. He can only be replaced by the new man. The old man is the unregenerate man. It's the manner of existence in Adam. It's a depraved nature, a defiled nature, a destitute nature. It is a dead nature. I was reading about a Wall Street broker. He was very, very successful. He was getting a few years on him, never been married. He had to be careful about who he dated because they might just want him for his money. So he got pretty serious about this one young lady, and here's what he did. He went to his administrative assistant, and here's what he said. I want you to hire a private investigator to follow this lady everywhere she goes. I want you to check her out. I'm not sure I can trust her, but I'm thinking about marrying her. He said, I don't want that lady to know she's being followed. I don't even want her to ever know that I hired a PI. I'm giving the money to you, administrative assistant. You hire the PI. Administrative assistant hired a great private investigator, followed the lady everywhere she went. This went on for a couple of months. So the administrative assistant met with a private investigator, and here's what he said. He said, this lady is stellar. Everything she does is wholesome. She goes to great places, hangs out with the best of people, works hard at our profession. There's not but one thing suspicious in her life. She's dating a Wall Street broker that's known for his unethical business deals here in New York City. That's the only problem we can find. You see, the problem might just be you, or it might be me. Now notice the style of character quickly. Those who have been saved by the grace of God, who have partaken of the divine gift, are those whose old life has been put to death. Look at verse 12. He talks about the new life. He says, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly beloved, he says here, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Word kindness there is often translated goodness. Humbleness of mind speaks of lowliness or humility. You know, it doesn't hurt to be kind. Delaney and I went out on our date on Friday afternoon. That included buying gasoline for her car at Kroger, going to Goo Goo to get the car washed. Boy, it's just wonderful when you go through that tunnel with your date at the car wash. The dashboard has a little sensor that picks up the car wash, and it does a diagram back and forth. That's one of the most exciting things we do. Then we went to Winslet Pharmacy. Well, you know, if your blood pressure's not strong enough, you're going to pass out during your date, so you got to go get your medicine. And then we went over to the Red Lobster to eat. We went in there around 2:30 because the lunch specials are still on, and everybody in there is over 65, so there's no fighting going on over there. People kind of fall off to sleep at their table every now and then because it's nap time, but that's about all that happened. Man, we had a great waitress. Never seen her before. So we took care of her a little extra. I mean, she knew what you wanted before you asked. She didn't bother you too much, so we left. We told the little hostess, we said, well, we really enjoyed our meal. I said, man, I want you to know that's a good waitress you've got back there. And she got excited. She said, it means a lot when you have a good meal and you have excellent service. Thank you for telling us how well we're doing. It doesn't hurt to be kind. It doesn't hurt to be humble. Then the word meekness there in Paul's day spoke of animals that had been tamed. It spoke of harness strength. Why is it we train our animals and we don't allow the Lord to train us? My sister's Golden has been to obedience school. He's graduated many times. And the only thing we can figure out when we go over there once a year is my sister and her husband do everything that dog wants them to do. We were watching TV the other night, and do you know there is now summer camp for your dog? That just blessed my heart. You know what bless your heart means, you'll understand what I'm talking about. He talks about that we're to be meek people. Our strength is harnessed. It's under control. He talks about long suffering, known as patience. That means putting up with difficult people. And then in verse 13, he says, forgiving one another, if any man have a quarrel against you. Now, those are two lost virtues now. Patience. Why do we have road rage? People in our society don't have patience. And then forgiving one another. Putting up with people, forgiving them. Not just an act of saying, yeah, I forgive you for that. But it goes on just a little bit further. It also has to do with reconciliation, restoration. And if you try to reconcile with somebody and they don't, you've done everything you can do. You could just walk away. If we're honest, we'd have to admit that this is one of the hardest tasks, not only in the Christian life, but in life in general. But we're given the model and example to follow, to forbear and forgive, even as Christ forgave
you also you are to do.
I was reading the other day about a young man who got caught embezzling a corporation where he worked. The president of the company called him in, said, "All right, son, we know you did it. What do you have to say?" Guy was caught. He confessed. He was very humble and had remorse. The president of the company was very impressed with how broken this man was. So the president looked at him and said, "If I take you back, can I trust you?" Now think about that. Somebody who's stealing your money, you're thinking about rehiring and trusting with your money. I don't know about that. The president went on and said, "Look, I'm not going to press charges against you. I'm going to offer your job back." And the employee said, "I don't understand why you're doing this." And here's what the president said. I want to read it to you. "You're the second man who fell and was pardoned. I was the first. The mercy you just received, I one day receive. I forgive you because I too was once forgiven. May God have mercy on both of us." I believe one of the saddest ways to go through life is to hold and harbor resentment in your heart. He says, put off corruption of the sinful man and put on the character of the saintly man. Well, when you get up in the morning, you decide what you're going to wear. I'm amazed when I go over to the school to mentor in cold weather. It's 35 degrees outside and my kid shows up in shorts and a t-shirt. "Son, don't you have a coat?" "Yeah." "Where is it?" "Home." "It ain't cold." "Boy, I know you're not making all A's. But do you know the difference in hot and cold?" We give a lot of care to how we dress. We do. But let me ask you this. Do you give much thought about that new nature that you're clothed in and the kind of behavior and character you're supposed to display and I'm supposed to display that magnifies the life of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords? When we have that kind of awareness and we put that awareness in action, then we'll be dressed for success with our spiritual lives. Let's stand, heads bowed, eyes are closed.